Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really excited about this one.
Me too.
We're going to be looking at Isaiah 53,
Yep.
which is it's often called the servant song,
Yeah.
and it's so fascinating. I think a lot of people maybe have heard of it,
Right.
but you know, may not have really dug into it.
Yeah. And it's actually the section of the Hebrew Bible that's quoted
Oh
the
wow.
most in the New Testament.
That's really interesting.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've heard that before, but just to hear you say it again, it's just like, wow.
Yeah, it's had a huge impact
Yeah.
on Christian thought and theology.
So to help us kind of break this down,
Yes.
we're going to be drawing from a lecture by Dr. Marv Wilson.
A scholar of the prophets.
Yes. And just getting ready to dive in, it looks like we're going to be talking about some really interesting
Yeah, some
things.
big themes here.
Like the idea of a suffering servant, the idea of somebody taking on the punishment of others.
Vicarious atonement.
Yes, exactly. And then also, you know, like what all this says about God's role in history.
How God works in the world.
Yeah, how God works in the world. Exactly. So much to unpack here.
It's a lot.
So let's just start at the beginning. Who is this servant?
That's the big question.
It is the big question, right?
Yeah.
Because the way the servant is described, it's kind of unexpected.
It is.
You know, you think of like a hero, you
Yeah.
think of somebody who's like, you know, maybe really
Doing
popular and
powerful.
powerful. Yeah, exactly. But the servant's not described that way at all.
No, he's described as kind of unassuming,
Yeah.
rejected.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have any kind of outward prestige or power.
It's so
It
interesting
is.
because it makes you think like, well, if this is God's chosen servant,
Right.
why wouldn't God choose somebody who is like, you know?
Super impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it made me think about those times in history when you know it's the underdog
Yes.
who actually ends up like changing the course of things.
Yeah, and Dr. Wilson gives us a couple of great examples.
Okay, like what?
That small group of Israelites, you
Right.
know, escaping from the mighty Egyptian Empire
Against all odds.
against all odds, exactly.
Yeah.
Or even just
Yeah.
that ragtag group of like shepherd farmers who
Right.
become this voice
Yeah.
for, you know, this groundbreaking revelation.
It's like God's not impressed by. That's
Yeah.
what the world considers
My
impressive.
outward appearances,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You
It's
know,
like inner strength or something.
yeah, he's looking at the heart,
Yeah.
you know.
And I like that because it does make you think about how often we might overlook people, you
Yeah.
know, the people who are just kind of quiet.
Why?
Maybe they're not like,
The loud ones?
yeah, not super charismatic or whatever, but there's so much going on
Yeah, you never know.
under surface. Yeah. Okay, so speaking of hidden depths, let's talk about this whole suffering thing.
Yes, let's dive into that
Because
because that's
it's
really
central to the whole
at
passage.
the heart of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not just that he suffers, it's the way it's
The
described.
language, the
Yeah.
emotional weight of it.
Yes.
Yeah, he's called the man of sorrows, despised and rejected.
Yeah.
Like someone who knows suffering intimately.
It's hard to read those words and not feel
You really
something.
feel it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's this phrase that Dr. Wilson points out,
Okay.
Hester Panem,
Yeah, Hester Panem.
which means it's turning of the face.
Turning of the face. Yeah. And that's a really interesting phrase
Yeah, why?
because it's usually used when God is turning away
Oh,
from Israel
because of their sin?
because of their disobedience.
Okay.
Yeah, their rebellion.
So it's like a judgment thing.
Right. It's judgment
But here it's applied to the
to
servant.
the servant. Yeah.
So how do we?
Makes sense
It's
as
a
that.
puzzle, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a real head scratcher.
Yeah, because we think of God turning away from people.
Yeah, is a bad thing.
Right.
Right.
But now we have God turning away from the servant.
From this chosen servant.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some scholars think that it might be because the servant is so closely aligned with God,
Okay.
so intertwined with the divine.
Like almost like an extension of God in a way.
In a way, yeah,
Okay.
that this turning away is a kind of
Wow.
divine empathy.
Okay.
Like God choosing to experience the pain
That's
of
powerful.
humanity firsthand.
Yeah, that is powerful.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the question becomes like,
Yeah, why is the servant going through all
why
that?
is the servant
What's the
suffering? What's
purpose?
the perp? Yeah,
Yeah.
because it's clearly not just like
Right. It's
random.
not an accident.
Right.
It's intentional.
Right. And this is where we get into this whole concept of like,
Vicarious atonement.
yeah,
Yeah.
which is basically the idea that the servant is
Taking on the burdens of others.
taking on the burdens of others.
Suffering in their
So
place.
it's not just her own pain. He's
Yeah.
somehow absorbing the pain of
Of
others.
others, yeah.
That's pretty
It
wild.
is a radical idea.
Yeah.
And Dr. Wilson used a really vivid image to explain it.
What was that?
He said it's like the servant is stepping up
Okay.
and taking the sinner's place.
Wow.
And when you think about the theological implications of that,
Yeah.
it really changes our understanding of things like responsibility and grace.
Okay, unpack that for me because
Yeah.
I'm not quite following.
So usually we think of punishment as being tied to
Right.
our actions.
Right. We mess up, we face the consequences.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's very individualistic.
Okay.
But this idea of vicarious atonement,
okay,
it kind of throws that out the window.
So it's not just about me and what I've done.
It's not just about you.
Yeah.
It's about...
It's a bigger picture.
Yeah, being this bigger picture, and it introduces this idea that somebody else can actually step in.
Wow.
And carry the weight.
That's heavy.
It is heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what we mean by grace. It's unearned.
It's not something we deserve.
Undeserved forgiveness.
Okay. So instead of focusing on individual punishment,
right,
Isaiah 53 is shifting the focus to this much bigger picture of like restoration.
Of restoration. Exactly. Yeah. It's not just about individual transgressions.
Okay.
It's about God's desire to heal the brokenness of the world.
Wow.
To restore shalom.
Shalom.
That sense of complete well-being.
Yeah, wholeness.
And wholeness.
Yeah. Okay, so that makes you think about suffering in a whole new way.
It does.
Does
it? Yeah, it really challenges our assumptions.
Yeah, okay, so now I'm curious.
Yeah.
How does the servant react to all of this?
How does he respond?
Yeah, because, you know, if I was being treated that way, I would probably not be silent.
I'd have a thing or two to say.
I'd have a lot to say.
Right.
But the passage says that he's...
Silent.
Silent.
And submissive.
Yeah, that's so strange.
It's so counterintuitive.
Yeah, especially like in our culture today. You know, everybody's encouraged to like...
Speak your truth.
Speak your truth.
Express yourself.
Yeah.
Right? If you see injustice...
Call it out.
Call it out.
Yeah.
But the servant is just...
Silent.
Silent.
And it suggests this different kind of strength.
Okay.
Like a deep trust.
Yeah.
In a higher purpose.
That's interesting.
Even when it doesn't make sense.
Right.
On a human level.
And it's not just in Isaiah...
No.
Dr. Wilson pointed out that this whole silence thing,
yeah,
it shows up in the New Testament too.
In the Gospels.
With Jesus.
Yes.
With Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he's being accused,
yeah,
interrogated.
He doesn't defend himself.
Doesn't try to explain himself.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
Because it makes you think, like, is there something powerful about that?
Is there a wisdom there?
Yeah.
That we're missing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here's the question that's been bugging me.
Okay.
This whole idea of God's will.
Mm-hmm.
How do we reconcile that with all the suffering?
The problem of evil.
The problem of evil.
No angel,
exactly. Right. Like, if God is so powerful and so loving, why does he allow bad things to happen?
That's a tough one.
It is a tough one.
And Dr. Wilson acknowledges that it's a paradox.
Okay.
You know, on the one hand,
yeah,
we have this moral obligation to fight injustice.
To stand up for what's right.
To oppose evil.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
yeah,
we don't always have the ability to grasp the bigger picture.
Yeah, like we don't know.
We don't see
God's plan.
God's plan.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so maybe it's not about denying the reality of suffering.
No.
But it's about
trusting.
Trusting, yeah.
That God.
That God is at work somehow.
If it works somehow.
Yeah. So. And Dr. Wilson brought up this example from the book of Genesis.
Oh, yeah.
It's a story of Joseph.
And his brothers.
Yeah. Remember they sold him into slavery?
Out of jealousy.
Out of jealousy. It was awful.
It's a terrible thing.
And you think, like, where is God in this?
Where is God?
But then years later.
Yeah.
When Joseph is in a position of power, he says to his brothers,
what does he say?
You intended to harm me,
yeah,
but God intended it for good.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not about understanding why bad things happen, but it's about believing that God can use those things
to bring good
out of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even in the darkest moments,
there's
a possibility of redemption.
Of redemption.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a bigger story unfolding.
A bigger story that we can't fully see yet.
We just see a little sliver.
Yeah, and that's the hope that I think this passage offers.
Yeah.
It's challenging.
It is challenging.
But it's also comforting.
Especially when we're going through hard times.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so let's shift gears for a second.
Okay.
And talk about the servant's reward.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's not all doom and gloom.
No, it's not all suckering.
Right.
No.
Dr. Wilson pointed out that the passage ends...
On a note of triumph.
On a note of triumph, yeah.
Yeah, the language is really striking.
Yeah, what does it say?
Well, it talks about the servant... Seeing his offspring.
Okay.
Prolonging his days.
Okay.
Even dividing the spoils.
Like a king.
Like a victorious king.
Wow.
Yeah.
Those are some powerful images.
They are powerful.
Can you break those down for me a little bit?
Sure.
What do they symbolize?
Well, Dr. Wilson suggests that this idea of seeing his offspring.
Yeah.
Could refer to, like, the spiritual descendants.
Okay.
Of the servant.
So it's not necessarily, like, biological children?
Not necessarily, no.
Yeah.
It's more about the impact
he
has on the world.
Okay, so, like, all the people whose lives are changed.
Whose lives are transformed.
Because of his sacrifice?
Yeah, because of what he went through.
So in a way, like, we could be considered part of his offspring.
We could.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we're trying to live out.
If we're following in his footsteps.
Yeah, the values he embodied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and then prolonging his days.
Yeah, that one.
That connects back to the resurrection idea, right?
It does. It hints at
that death isn't the end.
Yeah, it's this idea of
that there's something beyond
life beyond death.
Yeah, okay.
A continuation of existence.
And then there's this image of dividing the spoils.
Yeah, that one's really evocative.
It is.
It's like
triumphant.
A conquering hero returning from battle.
Okay.
And he's sharing the riches of his victory
with the people who fought alongside him,
with his loyal followers.
I love that image.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it suggests that we get to share.
We do.
In the servant's victory.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
So his triumph over evil becomes our triumph.
Our triumph, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it speaks to this idea of Christmas victor. Christ is the ultimate victor over sin and death.
And that's really empowering.
It is empowering.
Because it means that we're not just like passive bystanders.
No, we're not just watching.
In this cosmic battle.
We're participants.
We are participants.
Yeah. We're fighting alongside him.
So let's bring us back to the listener for a second.
Okay.
Why should they care?
Yeah. Why does any of this matter?
About this ancient song?
Yeah. What is this relevant today?
Yeah.
Well, I think it all boils down to this.
Right.
Isaiah 53 offers us a really profound and universal message.
Of what?
Of hope.
Okay.
And redemption.
Redemption.
It gives us a glimpse into the very heart of God's love
for humanity. Yeah.
A love that's willing to go to extraordinary lengths to heal and restore us.
And it's not just a warm, fuzzy feeling.
No, it's not just sentimental. Yeah. It tells us that
even
when things seem dark and hopeless, there's a possibility.
There's always possibility.
Of transformation.
Right. A new life.
New life.
Ultimate victory.
Ultimate victory. Wow.
Yeah.
And that even when we're struggling, when we're going through hard times, we're not alone.
We're not alone.
There's a power greater than ourselves working for good.
Working for good even when we can't see it.
Even when we can't see it.
This has been so insightful.
It's a powerful passage.
I feel like I have a much deeper understanding of Isaiah 53 now.
Me too.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We have.
But I have a feeling our listeners still have some questions.
Probably.
So before we wrap things up, what's one final thought
you
want to leave them with?
I think the most important question to consider is this.
Okay.
If this ancient text
speaks
of a God who enters into human suffering and brings forth new life, where might we encounter that same God in our world today?
That's a good question.
Where do we see signs of resurrection?
Signs of resurrection.
Those glimpses of hope.
Yeah.
Breaking through.
In unexpected ways.
In unexpected ways, yeah.
That's something for all of us to reflect on.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've been talking about this idea of the servant as a guilt offering.
Yes.
And
a powerful concept.
It is a powerful concept, but I'm not sure I fully understand what that means.
Okay, well, Dr. Wilson explained that the term used here, ansham in Hebrew, comes straight out of the world of the Levitical sacrifices.
Right, the Old Testament sacrifice.
Yeah, which were a big part of ancient Israelite religion.
Okay, yeah, remind me.
Okay.
What were those sacrifices all about?
Well, they were a way for people to acknowledge their wrongdoing.
Their sin.
To seek atonement for their sins.
Right.
And the guilt offering specifically was for sins that someone knew.
Okay.
They committed.
Well, it wasn't an accident.
Not an accident, no.
Okay.
It was
like you knew you were doing something wrong.
You did it intentionally.
Okay.
And it required restitution.
Restitution.
Meaning you had to try to make things right.
Oh, okay.
With the person you had wronged.
Okay, so if we apply that to the servant,
it's
like he's taking on the weight of our guilt.
That's the idea.
Making amends for things that we've done wrong.
Yeah, and for those who see Jesus as the fulfillment of this prophecy, it resonates really deeply with the Christian understanding
of Jesus' sacrifice on the cross.
His sacrifice on the cross.
So he becomes like the ultimate guilt offering.
The ultimate guilt offering.
Yeah.
The one who reconciles humanity.
With God.
With God.
Yeah. It's amazing how these ancient rituals and these ideas can still speak to us.
They do.
Thousands of years later.
It's timeless.
It is timeless. It shows you that like this human need for forgiveness.
Yeah.
Second chances.
Yeah.
It's like universal.
We all mess up.
We do.
We all make mistakes.
Yeah.
And knowing that there's a path.
A path towards healing.
Towards healing, towards restoration.
And that we don't have to carry that burden of guilt forever.
Mm. Powerful.
It is powerful.
Yeah.
Okay. So one last thing I wanted to touch on is the servant's reward.
Yeah, we talked about the suffering.
We did talk about the suffering.
But it's not all bad news.
No, it's not. Dr. Wilson emphasized that the passage ends.
On a note of triumph.
On a note of triumph.
Yeah.
What does it say?
Well, it talks about how the servant will see his offspring.
Okay.
Prolong his days.
Okay.
And even divide the spoils like a conquering king.
Okay, so break that down for me.
Right.
What does all that symbolic language actually mean?
Well, see his offspring.
Okay.
Dr. Wilson suggested that this could refer to like the spiritual descendants of the servant.
So not necessarily biological children?
Not necessarily, no. Okay. It's more about the impact.
The impact he has.
Yeah, the ripple effect of his actions.
So it's like all the people whose lives are changed.
Yeah, transformed.
Because of his sacrifice.
Because of what he did.
So in a way, like, we could be considered part of his offspring.
We could.
If we're trying to live out.
Yeah, if we're following in his footsteps.
Yeah, the values that he embodied.
Yeah.
Okay, and then prolonging his days.
Yeah, that connects back to the idea of resurrection.
Okay.
That death isn't the end of the story.
Yeah, there's something beyond.
Yeah, a continuation of existence.
In a different form.
Yeah.
Okay, and then there's this image of dividing the spoils.
Yes.
Which is so triumphant.
It is. It evokes this imagery of a victorious warrior.
Okay.
Returning from battle.
Okay.
And he's sharing the riches.
With the people who fought alongside him.
With his loyal followers.
I love that image.
It's a beautiful image.
Yeah.
And it suggests that...
we get to share in that victory.
We do.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
So his triumph over evil becomes our triumph.
Our triumphs too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it speaks to this idea of Christmas victor.
Yes. Christ as the ultimate victor over sin and death.
And that's so empowering.
It is empowering.
Because it means that we're not just passive bystanders.
No, we're not just
watching this cosmic battle.
We're participants.
We're fighting alongside him.
So let's bring this back to the listener for a second.
Okay.
Why should they care?
Yeah, why does any of this matter?
About this ancient song.
Yeah, why is this relevant today? Yeah.
Well, I think it all boils down to this.
Yeah.
Isaiah 53 offers us a really profound and universal message.
Of what?
Of hope.
Okay.
And redemption.
And redemption.
It gives us a glimpse.
Yeah.
Into the very heart of God's love.
For us.
For humanity.
Yeah.
A love that's willing to go to extraordinary lengths.
Yeah.
To heal and restore us.
And it's not just a warm, fuzzy feeling.
No, it's not just sentimental.
Right.
It tells us that even when things seem dark and hopeless.
Yeah.
There's a possibility.
There's always possibility.
Of transformation.
Yeah. New life.
New life.
An ultimate victory.
Ultimate victory. Wow.
Yeah.
And even when we're struggling.
Yeah. When we're going through hard times.
Yeah.
We're not alone.
We're not alone.
There's a power greater than ourselves.
Yeah.
Working for good.
Working for good, even when we can't see it.
Even when we can't see it.
This has been so insightful.
It's a powerful passage.
I feel like I have a much deeper understanding of 53 now.
Me too.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We have.
But I have a feeling our listener still has some questions.
Probably.
So before we wrap things up, what's one final thought you want to leave them with?
I think the most important question to consider is this.
Okay.
If this ancient text speaks of a God who enters into human suffering and brings forth new life,
where might we encounter that same God in our world today?
That's a good question.
Where do we see signs of resurrection?
Signs of resurrection.
Those glimpses of hope.
Yeah.
Breaking through.
In unexpected ways.
In unexpected ways, yeah.
That's something for all of us to reflect on.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
It's like he's not just carrying his own pain, but somehow like taking on the pain of everyone else.
The pain of the world.
That's a big idea. It is. It really is.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about how it changes our understanding of responsibility.
Yeah.
Like usually we think,
if I do something wrong, I face the consequences.
Exactly. You're responsible for your own actions.
So it's like very individualistic.
It is very individualistic.
But this idea of like somebody else taking the hit for you.
Yeah. That's where grace comes in.
Unearned
forgiveness.
Your goodness. Yeah.
It's a game changer.
It is a game changer.
It really is.
Okay. So we've been talking about this idea of like the servant being punished in our place, but the passage also talks about shalom.
Yes, shalom.
Which means
wholeness. Wholeness, yeah.
It's like this idea of everything being set, right?
Exactly. It's not just about individual punishment.
Yeah.
It's about this bigger picture of restoration.
Restoration, okay.
God's desire to heal the brokenness of the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's not just about me and my bad choices. It's like this cosmic plan.
Yeah, it's God's plan for the whole world.
To make things right.
To bring everything back into alignment.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've talked about the servant's suffering. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the purpose of that suffering.
Right.
But how does the servant react to all of this?
How does he respond?
Yeah, because if I was being treated that way, I'd be pretty upset.
You and me both.
I'd probably be shouting from the rooftops.
You wouldn't be silent.
No.
But the servant is...
He's silent?
He's silent and submissive, which seems so strange.
It's counterintuitive, isn't it?
Yeah, especially today.
Right.
When everybody's like,
speak your truth.
Speak your truth.
Yeah. If you see injustice, call it out.
Yeah.
Don't just sit there and take it.
Right. But the servant's not doing that.
He's not fighting back.
He's not saying a word. And it makes you wonder,
what's going on there?
Is there a different kind of strength in that silence?
Mm.
Maybe a deeper trust.
Trust in what?
in God's plan.
Even though it doesn't make sense.
Even when it's hard to understand.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not just in Isaiah.
Wilson points out
that we see the same kind of silence
in the Gospels.
With Jesus.
With Jesus. Yeah.
Okay.
When he's being accused.
Right.
Interrogated.
He doesn't try to defend himself.
He often chooses silence.
That's so interesting.
It's a powerful connection.
It really is.
And it makes you wonder.
Like, maybe there's something to this.
Is there a deeper wisdom there?
Yeah.
That we've lost sight of.
Okay, so here's a question.
Okay, sure.
How do we make sense of this whole God's will thing?
The age-old question.
It is the age-old question.
The problem of evil.
The problem of evil, yeah.
How can a good God allow bad things to happen?
Right, like if God is all-powerful.
All-loving.
All-knowing.
Why is there so much suffering in the world?
It's a question that's haunted me for a long time.
Me too.
And I'm not sure I have a good answer.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
It is a tough one.
But Dr. Wilson does offer some insights.
Okay, I'm listening.
He says it's a paradox.
It's a paradox.
Yeah, on the one hand,
yeah.
We have a moral obligation to fight injustice.
Right.
To oppose evil.
Yeah, to stand up for what's right.
Exactly.
But at the same time, we don't always understand
God's ways.
God's ways.
Yeah, we don't see the bigger picture.
So we might think something is bad.
Right.
But God might be using it for good.
That's the trust.
The trust.
That we're called to have. It is hard.
It's really hard.
Especially when we're in the middle of suffering.
Right. When you're the one going through it.
It's easy to question.
Yeah. Where is God? And
why is this happening?
Why?
Right.
But Dr. Wilson brought up this example.
Okay.
From the book of Genesis. The story of Joseph.
And his brothers.
Yeah. Remember how his brothers
sold
him into slavery?
Oh, jealousy.
They were so jealous of him.
It was terrible what they did.
Awful.
Yeah.
And you think, like, where is God in all of this?
Where is the justice?
Right.
Yeah.
But then years later.
Right.
When Joseph is in a position of power.
Yeah, he's second in command in Egypt.
And his brothers come to him for help.
They don't even recognize him.
And he could have taken revenge.
He could have.
He had every right to.
Absolutely.
But he doesn't.
What does he say to them?
He says, you intended to harm me.
Right.
But God intended it for good.
Wow.
Talk about turning a bad situation around.
Incredible.
So maybe it's not about understanding why bad things happen.
Not about having all the answers.
But about believing that God can.
Can bring good out of it.
Even in the midst of suffering.
Even in the darkest moments.
There's a possibility of redemption.
Yes.
Yeah, like a bigger story unfolding.
A bigger story that we can't fully see.
That we're just a small part of.
Right, we only see a little sliver.
And that's the hope that this passage offers.
It is a message of hope.
It is challenging.
It is challenging.
But it's also comforting.
Yeah, especially when we're going through hard times.
Yeah, because it reminds us that
we're not alone.
We're not alone.
And that God is at work.
Even when we can't see it.
Even when we can't see it.
Okay, so
let's shift gears.
Talk about the servant's reward.
Yes, let's talk about that.
Because it's not all doom and gloom.
No, it's not.
Right? Dr. Wilson pointed out that the passage ends
on a note of triumph.
On a note of triumph, yeah.
Yeah, and the language is really striking.
Okay, like what?
Well, it talks about the servant seeing his offspring.
Okay.
Prolonging his days.
Okay.
Even dividing the spoils.
Dividing the spoils.
Like a victorious king.
Like a king.
Yeah. Wow.
So what do those images symbolize?
Yeah, what do they mean?
Well, Dr. Wilson suggests that seeing his offspring
could
refer to the spiritual descendants.
Okay, so not like biological children?
Not necessarily, no.
But the people whose lives are changed.
Transformed.
Because of his sacrifice.
Because of what he did.
So in a way, we could be considered.
We could be part of his offspring.
Yeah, if we're trying to live out.
If we're following in his footsteps.
Yeah, the values that he embodied.
Right.
Okay, and then prolonging his days.
Yeah, that one.
Connects back to the resurrection idea.
It does, it hints
at. That death isn't the end.
Yeah, it's this idea of life beyond death.
A continuation of existence.
Yeah, a different form.
Okay, and then there's this image of dividing the spoils.
Yeah, which is so triumphant.
It is.
It's like this conquering hero.
Okay. Returning from battle.
And sharing the riches of his victory.
With his loyal followers.
I love that image.
Yeah, it's a beautiful image.
Because it means that we get to share.
We do.
In that victory.
We share in the servant in victory.
Wow. So his triumph over evil becomes our triumph.
Our triumphs too.
Yeah.
And it speaks to this idea of Christmas victor.
Christmas victor.
Christ as the ultimate victor over sin and death.
And that's so empowering.
It is empowering.
Because it means that we're not just passive bystanders.
No, we're not just watching
this cosmic battle.
We're participants.
We are participants, yeah.
We're fighting alongside him.
It's like we're all part of this bigger story, this cosmic battle between good and evil.
Exactly. And Isaiah 53 highlights this really interesting theme.
Okay, what's that?
It's the idea of righteousness being credited to others.
Okay.
Because of the servant's actions.
Because of what the servant has done.
Right. And Dr. Wilson connected this
to
the Apostle Paul's writings about justification by faith.
Okay, so remind me, what is justification by faith?
It's this idea that we are made right with God.
Okay.
not because of our own efforts,
okay,
but because of what Christ has done for us.
So it's not about earning our way into God's good graces.
No, it's not about being good enough.
Yeah.
It's about accepting this free gift of grace.
Wow, that's a pretty radical idea.
It is. It really challenges our human tendency.
We want to earn things.
To work for it.
To prove ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Dr. Wilson emphasized that this righteousness isn't just some abstract theological concept.
Yeah, it has to have real-world implications, right?
It does. It changes how we see ourselves.
Okay.
How we relate to God.
Mm-hmm.
And how we live in the world.
So it's not just about feeling good about ourselves.
Right. It's about a transformation.
Okay.
That goes way beyond just our feelings.
So it actually changes our behavior.
It does.
How we treat other people.
Absolutely.
Our outlook on life.
Our whole way of being in the world.
Wow, that's...
Yeah, it's powerful stuff.
It's a powerful idea.
Yeah.
This has been such a rich and thought-provoking conversation.
It has.
I feel like we've only just scratched the surface.
Yeah, there's so much more we could say.
Of all that Isaiah 53 has to offer.
It's a passage that really rewards careful study.
It does.
You could spend a lifetime unpacking it.
So before we wrap things up,
okay,
what's one key takeaway you hope our listener will walk away with?
I think the most important thing to remember is this.
Okay.
Isaiah 53 offers us a profound and moving portrait
of
a suffering servant
who
ultimately triumphs.
Right.
And this theme,
it's
resonated for centuries.
It has.
It shaped Christian theology,
inspired
countless lives.
And it continues to speak to us today because it's a universal message.
It's a message about hope,
redemption.
It tells us that even in the face of suffering,
even when things seem hopeless,
there's always a possibility of new life.
Of love conquering all.
Love conquering all.
That's beautiful.
It is a beautiful message.
Thank you so much for being our guide through this incredible deep dive.
It was my pleasure.
It's been an honor to learn alongside you.
Likewise.
And to our listener, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for being here.
Keep exploring, keep questioning.
And keep seeking those glimpses of the divine.
In the everyday.
Because the story of the suffering servant isn't just an ancient tale.
Right.
It's a story that's still being written.
And we all have a part to play.
And you were a part of it.